Koreskin Castle for years. Trust me, within the week, there will be a new scandal so outrageous that I will be a whisper of a memory forgotten in time. Do you really think so? I tilted my head up, thinking. Maybe a week is too soon. Let's start counting. This is day one. If something entirely new hasn't swept up the attentions of court in, let's say, 50 days, then you can choose your reward. Deal. He sealed the bargain with a kiss, and it was the most beautiful thing, to be free and alone with Silas. We heard the unmistakable sound of horses in the distance and ran to the front of the manor to see. Coming down the weathered path, Lady Eastoff poked her head out of the carriage, waving. Silas and I stood on the front steps, ready to welcome our family to their new home in Koroa. Chapter 28. Let me do this final knot, and you'll be ready. Scarlet laced me into one of her dresses with slightly less extravagant sleeves so I could brave the trip to Verringer Hall. It had taken a day for my letter to reach the palace, another for a reply, and now it was time to face my dragons. Did you all intend to buy a home so close to mine? I asked, still nervous about my mission. Not at all, she answered with a laugh. We had four replies for estates, and this was the least expensive one. I looked around at the ragged room we'd been sharing the last 2 days for the sole purpose of improving one room at a time. I can't imagine why. Silas made me swear I'd never tell you where we were settling. He said you would be living at the castle forever now anyway, so you'd never know. Personally, I thought it was fate. She turned around so I could line up her laces, quite content with her assessment. Fate, you say? I'll ask you about that again when we're sweeping cobwebs from the corners this afternoon, I teased. She giggled as I pulled her in tight, and I was pleased to see I hadn't lost my talent for tying a gown. There, pretty as a picture. Do you want me to come with you? She offered. No, I think your mother will suffice. Besides, I'm not sure how the staff will behave when I show up without my parents. I'm sure it will be fine. She kissed my cheek. Come visit soon, all right? I don't think Silas would let me stay away too long anyway. You have my word. I'll bring your dress back by the end of the week at least, I promised, going to find Lady Eastoff. She was waiting in the entryway, sliding her gloves on. It was a move remarkably reminiscent of my own mother, the final touch to make sure she looked like a lady. She walked over, giving me a warm embrace. All ready? She asked. Yes. The dress is a bit long on me, but at least it's not a muddy ball gown. Thank you all again. She laughed. Anything for you, darling girl. Let's get going. Your parents will have a lot to say to you, and I don't want to keep them waiting. I'm sure they've got enough to dislike me for at the moment, she added with a wink. I followed obediently into the coach, and we sat in comfortable silence for most of the ride to my house. Silas says you two would like to be married quickly. Are you quite sure about that? You were just in a very serious relationship, she offered. No, I wasn't. I looked away, going through the memories in my head. It was short, and manipulative, and one-sided. I was so caught up in the fun of being elevated that I didn't see for a long time how Jameson was treating me. I hate to admit this, and you must never tell him I said it. But Eaton was right. Jameson wanted me to be pretty and entertaining, but never to think or fail. I'm not sure that can be called a relationship. Not really. She shook her head, an understanding smile on her face. No, I suppose it can't. I love Silas. He sees me as I am and loves me with all my faults. I don't want to wait when I already know." She patted my leg, looking quite pleased. "Sounds a lot like me when I found Dashiell. There were people who warned me about rushing, of course, but I couldn't help it. He swept me off my feet." That was a feeling I knew all too well. When it was real, there was nothing to be done. We pulled up on the main road to Verringer Hall, and as we rounded to a stop, I saw my parents waiting for me on the front steps. Mother had her gloves on, which meant she didn't plan to be there for long. "Oh dear," I muttered. "That doesn't look good. Should I stay?" "No, they'll want to talk to me alone. I'll send a letter once things calm down." I stepped out of the carriage, turning to wave to Lady Eastoff before facing my parents. Father pointed, and I saw that, just in front of the carriage I'd gotten out of, another one was waiting.
"Get in," he insisted.
"Where are we going?" My mother crossed her arms.
"To the castle. You are going to beg King Jameson for forgiveness and smooth this over before another girl catches his eye."
"I would be delighted if that happened. Jameson deserves someone who understands his position, who's suited to be royalty."
"You are suited to be royalty," Mother insisted, coming down the steps. "We are suited to be royalty. Do you have any idea what you've done?"
"Claudia,"
Father said warningly. "I haven't forgotten," she shot back.
I realized then they were keeping secrets from me, and I didn't have the slightest idea what they were.
"Hollis, I hate to disappoint you, but you cannot marry this boy. He's common. He's Isolten."
"Mother," I urged her under my breath. Lady Eastoff was still right behind us.
"She knows she's a foreigner. That her son is. How could it be missed? Hollis, your departure has made us the laughing stock of court. Now, you will get in that carriage and make this right before anyone realizes why you left. The king has been so generous with you. He adores you. And if you give him the opportunity, I'm sure he would do everything he could to make you happy."
"Perhaps he would, Mother," I replied, my quiet voice almost startling next to her barks. "But try as he may, he would fail. I don't love him." She stared at me, refusing to budge.
"Hollis, so help me, you will get in that carriage."
"Or?"
"Or you will be on your own," my father finished.
I watched him, trying to understand. Behind him, the front doors were shut tight, and my parents were in their traveling clothes. I only just then saw the trunk that I'd taken to the castle was sitting on the steps. I was never going into my house, not if I didn't agree to go back to Jameson.
"I'm your only child," I whispered. "I know I wasn't a boy, and I was never as smart or talented as you would have hoped, but I have done my best. Don't lock me out of my own home."
"Get in the carriage," my mother insisted again.
I looked over at it, black and shiny and deadly. And then I looked back at my mother and father, and I shook my head. That was my last chance. With a nod of my father's head, the doorman picked up my trunk and threw it down the steps to my feet. I heard something smash inside it. I was hoping a broken bottle of perfume wasn't ruining what little I had left to my name.
"Oh my goodness," Lady Eastoff said, hurrying out of the coach. "Help me with this," she said to her driver, who quickly came over to pick up the trunk.
Lady Eastoff looked up at my mother, not bothering to disguise the rage in her eyes.
"Do you have something to say?" my mother shot at her.
Lady Eastoff shook her head, holding her arms around me as I stood in stunned silence.
"I've gone through so much to keep my family in one piece,"
I don't understand how you can tear yours apart without so much as a second thought. She's your daughter. I will not take lessons from you. If you're so concerned, you can be responsible for her now. Wait until you see how she repays you. I will be responsible for her. I'm proud to have her as my own, and I wouldn't be surprised if she accomplishes more than all of us one day. Mother dropped her voice. Not if she's married to your pig of a son.
Come, I whispered. There's no point talking to them. Let's go.
Having the class to hold her tongue, Lady Istoff guided me back into the coach. I climbed back in on unsteady feet, taking the seat that looked out at Varinger Hall. I had plucked apples from those trees as a girl, danced in the tall grass. I could still see the swing I'd climbed in the distance. I think, once, we were all happy here, before they realized I was their only hope, before I let them down. I watched as my parents went back inside, closing the doors behind them. It was the cold sound of them screeching shut that finalized what I had already suspected. I had no one but Silas now. There were no friends waiting for me back at the castle, no apartments to comfort me. My family no longer wanted me for their own, and I wasn't welcome in my childhood home. And so I left, thankful only for the arm wrapped tightly around my shoulder. Chapter 29. In an effort to make sure Silas and I could get married within 2 short weeks, all repairs to Abercrest Manor were focused on the main floor. The Istoffs intended to invite all the nearby families, both as a gesture of goodwill and as a chance to show them they weren't heathens. The floors were scrubbed, bringing new life to the stone. Furniture and tapestries the Istoffs had brought from Isolde were aired out and placed where they were highly visible. Staff was acquired quickly, and the Istoffs bought their loyalty with kindness and extra food. In short time, I was grafted into the family, and much pain was taken to make sure that, when it was official, it would be done through the best celebration they could afford. "Is this the one?" Lady Istoff asked, looking at the fabrics brought in for me to choose for my wedding dress. She was lingering over my signature gold. I have heard more brides are swinging toward white. It's meant to symbolize purity. I tried to be discreet about rolling my eyes. After leaving the castle the way I did, I worry white would only invite criticism. Scarlet gasped at me.
Hollis! If you want white, you should wear it. Can you please pull this one out more, sir? She asked, grabbing at a bolt of ivory fabric.
No, no, I insisted. Besides, Silas says I'm his shining sun. I think he'd like the gold.
That's so sweet, Scarlet commented. Then I think you're right. It should be gold.
My happiness was ever so slightly tainted by the knowledge that my parents were just on the other side of the plain, past the forest, and on lands that we'd held for generations, but that they refused to come see me. Too ashamed to return to the castle, they were staying in the country. They might as well have been on the other side of the continent for how close they felt. Without their approval, this was dangerously close to eloping. I was certain the reason Jameson had a hard time convincing the lords to approve of me was because of how much of the law circled around marriage. In most families, there were written contracts where the parties would make arrangements upon goods exchanged to prove the match was being done for the mutual benefit of both groups. If an engagement was officially made, it took another contract to undo it, and if a parent made an agreement on behalf of their child, sometimes that took the work of a holy man to undo, if not the king himself. Eloping and marrying quickly without the express approval of one's family told the world those laws were insignificant, and it brought on unending judgment. One look at Delia Grace's life was enough to prove that.
But where the family I was leaving had nothing to say, the one I was entering did nothing but fawn over me. The proof was in the preparation for my wedding, the fuss they made over gaining another daughter.
Gold it is, Lady Eastoff confirmed. What do you want for the style? I know the sleeves of Isolten gowns can be heavy, but I thought maybe we could round the neckline. Try to pull the two together? I smiled. She had said this about dozens of things. The dress, my hair, the dinner, the music. All she wanted to do was build a new life for all of us. I think that will look quite lovely. The tailor nodded in agreement and took his goods to begin his work. He said his shop could produce a gown in 5 days, so that would keep us right on schedule. As the tailor left, a maid walked in and whispered in Lady Eastoff's ear. Absolutely. Show her in at once. My heart leaped up into my chest. My mother was here, I just knew it. She was going to give me her blessing and let me wear a family heirloom, and everything was going to be all right. But my mother did not walk through the door. It was an older lady who looked to be a servant. She came over and curtsied before me. My Lady Hollis, I'm sure after so many years away you won't remember me, but I worked in your home, in Varinger Hall. I studied the woman's face, but she was right. I didn't recognize her. I'm sorry, I don't remember you. Is everything well with my parents? Is something wrong with the manor?
They are in good health, miss. They do seem quite sad. I think they regret sending you away, but that's not my place to say. But yesterday you got a letter. I felt after everything you'd been through, it might do you good to have some comforting words, so I planned to come today. Just before I left, a second letter arrived, so I brought it too.
She held out the neat little letters, and I recognized Delia Grace's handwriting immediately. The other was a mystery. Thank you very much. I'm sorry, what was your name?
Hester, my lady.
Hester, I am indebted to you.
It's no trouble. It's the simple kindnesses in life, isn't it?
I smiled. Yes, it is. Do you need an escort home? Or a horse?
Lady Eastoff turned to summon someone to help, but Hester lifted her hand.
Oh, no. It's such a pretty day for a walk. But I best be on my way. Many happy wishes for your wedding, my lady.
She moved slowly, and I wondered how long it had taken her to get here on foot.
We'll give you some privacy, Scarlet offered, pulling her mother from the room.
I smiled at her in gratitude and started with perhaps the more frightening update, the one from Delia Grace.
Dear Hollis.
I didn't miss that she didn't bother calling me lady.
You were right. The night you left, His Majesty was in need of a companion, and when I went to him mourning the departure of my closest friend, we related in a way we never had before. This morning I was gifted with a new gown. I think, at last, I am where I always wanted to be. There is other news. A section of the south wing caught fire the other day, and it was fortunate it didn't spread. No one is confessing to setting it, and though the rooms in question were supposedly empty at the time, my guess is it belonged to one of the Isoltans. They're all kept in that same area. There was a rumor that Jameson started it himself, which is a vicious lie. Kereskin Castle is his home. While His Majesty was out of sorts immediately after you left, he seems to be almost himself again these past few days. He's yelling less, and I talked him into throwing a tournament for the solstice, and the planning has lifted his spirits. I don't have the talent for making him laugh as you did, but he smiles for me sometimes. I'm the only person who can manage to get him to do that, so I'd say my place is relatively secure. My guess is, if he does care for me, he will be very cautious before offering his hand again. Honestly, there's a part of me that thinks he's waiting for you. Though I'm not sure why, after how you left. This reminds me, there is a rumor circulating that you are a witch. With the way the king was acting, someone said you must have cast a spell on him to drive him to such madness. Don't worry, I quashed that one. Well, I tried. Then there was one about you being pregnant, which, with your carefree spirit, was much easier for people to believe. There's only so much one can do to quell rumors at court, as you well know. Speaking of rumors, there is one that has been of particular interest to me. Someone told me that you didn't just leave the palace, but you left with the Eastoff boy. The oldest one, the one who made the sword. And they said that you were to be married to him any day now, and that you had been plotting to leave the castle with him for some time. Naturally, Jameson needs me so much right now that I cannot possibly leave to come and investigate this myself. But if there is any truth to this, I am most anxious to know of it. I think, if this is true, it would do Jameson what the eve of your engagement did for me. Allow him to settle into the inevitable. I think he will be much happier himself once he knows your heart belongs to another. For what it's worth, I am sorry things didn't work out. Just because I'd hoped for Jameson for myself doesn't mean I wished ruin upon you. Perhaps you won't believe that. I know I wasn't the best friend I could have been in recent weeks. But it is true. I'm sorry. I must be off. I find myself in the center of so much attention these days, and I don't want to disappoint anyone. Hope you are well, old friend. Send my best to your family. Delia Grace. I shook my head and folded up the letter. She might have been sorry, but she didn't say a word about wishing I was back, about missing me. I still missed her. But I bet she does, I whispered to myself. Delia Grace had a hard enough time mentioning her feelings out loud, so it was no surprise she'd be hesitant to put them in writing. But I knew her as no one else did. My guess was court life was a little lonely these days, even with all of Jameson's attention. I wouldn't be shocked to learn she missed me so much it hurt to write it down. Someday, I would mend all this. I picked up the other letter, studying the delicate handwriting, and flipping it over, I found the Isolten royal seal pressed into the wax. Valentina, I whispered hopefully. Dear Hollis, I am both surprised and not surprised by your news. I think if I had reconsidered before supporting the current rider at the tournament, I would have been much more satisfied with another. I squinted at the words. Tournament? Pausing, I flipped the letter over and studied the seal again. If I looked closely, I could see where some wax had been melted away and the note resealed before being sent to me. She warned she might write in code, so my guess was that she was speaking of King Quentin. Yes, I too would have gone with a different knight. I wish so dearly that I could see you again. I could use another game of dice. Talk to me? Be comforted by someone? I have been working so hard on my garden, but I'm afraid the very rare flower that I planted has wilted. It's been difficult to stay bright without it. I paused over that one, thinking it could only have one meaning and hating it. She'd lost the baby. I had to sit for a moment and swallow my tears. She'd been so nervous before, and then so happy when she was positive her baby was on the way. That was three now. I couldn't imagine her suffering.
I do love that I have your letters to look forward to. So, once you are married and settled, do take some time to write me all the details of your special day. I want to feel as if I were in Koroa again, standing beside you, eating honey cakes. I'm sorry this letter is so brief, but since my garden has waned, I find myself easily tired. I will send you more news soon, telling you all the gossip about the gentry in Isolt, even though you won't know any of these people at all. The stories themselves are amusing, and I think it might keep you entertained out in the country. Do take care of yourself, Lady Hollis. Stay well and write soon. Your dear friend, Valentina. I sighed. I wished she could be standing by my side, too. Tucking my letters into my skirts, I went to the only person I could talk to about this. Chapter 30. If he wasn't helping with the renovations to the manor, Silas was always in the outbuildings with Sullivan, working on new pieces. It seemed, despite the rumors of our leaving together, he was still receiving commissions. The people of court had seen Eastoff work firsthand at least twice now, and there was no denying their skill. I could see him through the large, glassless window, hammering away on metal as Sullivan appeared to be polishing a piece toward the back. "Good afternoon, sir," I said, setting myself down on the window ledge. "My lady," Silas called, wiping sweat from his face before coming over and kissing me. In the corner, Sullivan stashed his work under some straw. "To what do I owe the honor of your company?" "I had a question for you." Quietly, Sullivan crept out the door. If anyone took the time to watch, it was impossible to miss how sweet he was. He tended to live in his own world in his head, but he wanted to offer others privacy too, just in case. "What do you want to know?" "Do you remember how I was in charge of entertaining Valentina?" He laughed. "Yes. And I remember you doing a smashing job because no one, I mean no one, in the Sultan court could get her to smile, let alone talk." It felt like quite an accomplishment at the time. I wasn't sure, after we spoke, if you realized just how close Valentina and I were. Silas raised his eyebrows, looking over at me. "I realized. As much as I was wishing you'd come just to speak to me, I could tell how worried you were for her. I was hoping it would be a very short-lived friendship." I grimaced. "I know you and the Isolde royal family aren't exactly on good terms." "You don't know the half of it." "But all the same, I care about Valentina. She's entrusted me with some very important secrets." He squinted, crossing his arms.
"Such as?"
I sighed. "She just had a miscarriage. It's the third one she's lost." Silas stood there, gaping at me.
"Are you certain?"
"Yes. She told me under strict confidence about the first two when she visited. And she just wrote me about the third. I'm worried for her." He ran his fingers through his hair.
"Three. I have to tell Father."
"No," I insisted, putting my hands up. "I promised I'd keep her secret, and she trusts me. I'm only telling you so I can explain my following very unreasonable request."
"Which is?"
"Do you... could we go to Isolt sometime soon?"
"Hollis."
His face was aghast and his tone flat. "Not for long," I promised. "I know that Valentina is all alone, and I'm sure she's afraid the king may divorce her, or worse, now that she's lost a third child. I want her to know she has a friend."
"Then write her a letter."
"It's not the same," I protested.
He shook his head, staring back at the fire.
I resigned myself to the fact that I wouldn't be able to give you the life you were going to have at the palace.
I don't want that life, I interjected.
And I promised myself that, so long as it was in my power, I'd give you everything you ever asked for. He came closer, lowering his voice. But Isolt is a dangerous place for my family. The king doesn't trust us, and we're not sure if the Darkest Knights would tolerate us, even for a visit. For goodness sake, I was the one who convinced my family to finally leave. He clasped my hands tightly. I can't go back there. Not now. Maybe not ever. I dropped my head but tried to not look too disappointed. Running off had caused much more of a mess than I'd bargained for, and I kept worrying I was taking things away from Silas instead of adding to his life. I didn't want this to be something else he worried about for my sake. You're right. I'm sorry. I'll write Valentina and try to be a comfort that way. He kissed my forehead. I hate to say no. For now, we need to take time for ourselves. Start our lives. He smiled. I feel like I've been waiting for you for ages.
Well, not much longer, sir.
Not much longer at all.
He smiled, and the world felt right. I couldn't wait to become an Eastoff. By the way, I said, walking back to the manor, Delia Grace, who has been gifted a dress by the king, has heard rumors I'm to be married and is very concerned about their validity. He laughed heartily.
I'll bet she is. Tell her you actually ran off with some gypsies.
Oh, no. Tell her you joined the monks of Catal and are now living out of a cave. I've got tools. We could carve your letter into a rock.
If we find any big enough.
I walked back, thinking I did need to tell Valentina something to encourage her, and I knew Delia Grace was probably pacing her rooms at this very moment, wondering if I was a married woman or not. Still, with all of that, there was only one letter I could think about writing today. Blessed Mother and Father, I'm sorry. I know I have disappointed you, not only with refusing to marry the king, but with the several years of squandered attention that led up to today. I rarely behaved the way you wished I would. Some of that is simply my nature, but the rest I cannot explain. I didn't aim to be unruly. I simply wanted to find the joy in everything, and it's difficult to do that while sitting still and saying nothing. I apologize for letting you down. I can't undo what's been done, but I do believe, in my heart of hearts, that His Majesty will find someone far better to wed, someone who will be a superior leader for Koroa. Even with my best intentions, my leadership would have proven disastrous, and I hope that my absence from my king's life will ultimately benefit the people of Koroa far more than my presence in it would have. I believe I found my equal in Silas Eastoff. I know you're unhappy because he doesn't exactly live like a gentleman, even though his family is an old one in Isolt. And I know you're not pleased because he isn't Koroan. But I think this snubbing of Isoltans has gotten our people nowhere. The handful I truly know, I really care for. And I can't pretend I don't know better anymore. I love Silas, and I'm marrying him in 2 days. I'm sending this to you as a last hope that you will find a way to forgive me and be present on the most important day of my life. No, I wasn't the boy you hoped for. No, I didn't become queen. And yes, I shamed our family publicly. But why does any of this matter? The games of court will put you into an early grave if you let yourself be swept up in them. You are still members of one of the strongest family lines in Koroa. You still have land and assets that put you above the majority of the country. And you still have a daughter
who desperately wants to be in your lives. Please consider coming to my wedding. If not, I will wait until you are ready to see me again, trusting that this day will come. I may be poor in many other skills, but I've become exceedingly talented at hoping. 2 days from now, 5 in the evening, at Abercrest Manor. With all my love, your daughter, Hollis. Chapter 31. With this ring, I take thee, Hollis Bright, as my wife. With my body, I swear to you my loyal service. With my heart, I swear to you my unending faithfulness. And with my life, I swear to you my devoted provision for as long as our God should deem. The ring that Silas made himself slid down my finger. After all the jewels I'd worn over the last few months, I asked for something simple, and though he disagreed, he delivered. Once the thin golden band was in place, I turned to face him, ready to recite the vows myself. With this ring, I take thee, Silas Eastoff, as my husband. With my body, I swear to you my loyal service. With my heart, I swear to you my unending faithfulness. And with my life, I swear to you my devoted provision, for as long as the God should deem. The slightly larger ring settled into perfect place on his hand, and finally, I was married. "You may kiss your bride," the holy man said. As Silas bent down to kiss me, the ceremony was over, and applause went up around the room. The main hall in Abercrest Manor was surprisingly full. Neighbors from several estates had come to meet the Eastoffs for the first time. Many knew me from my youth or shared time at the castle, and they seemed very curious to see the person I'd chosen over a king. The Eastoffs even allowed their staff, who had worked so tirelessly to make the manor presentable, to stand in the back for the ceremony, and I noticed happily that when some of them moved to pass out goblets of ale, their peers were the first ones to receive them. And there, in the middle of my guests, were my parents. They weren't smiling. In fact, as the room was applauding and receiving drinks for the toast, they appeared to be arguing under their breath. I let it go. For better or worse, at least they'd come. "A toast," Lord Eastoff began. "To such wonderful neighbors and friends for supporting us as we settle in Koroa. To an absolutely perfect day for the happiest of celebrations. And to Silas and Hollis. Hollis, we have loved you from the start, and we are thrilled to have you join what has become the most scandalous family in Koroa, you poor swindled girl." The room laughed at this, myself included. I knew exactly what I was getting into. "To Silas and Hollis," he finished. The room chorused the words back, lifting their glasses. In an elegantly rehearsed move, the strings started up as the drinks came down, and everyone moved around the room to mingle. "I have a sister, I have a sister," Scarlet sang, crashing into me for a hug. "Me too. Oh, my whole life I've wanted siblings. Now I get 3 in 1 day. Saul wrapped his arms around my waist, looking to fill whatever space Scarlet left open. And when they were finally done, Sullivan crept over, blushing wildly, and hugged me too. To my surprise, it wasn't just a quick embrace. He held on to me, palms flat across my back, breathing steadily, and I held him back, wondering if he needed to be hugged like this from time to time, but was too shy to say so. He pulled back, smiling. "Welcome to the family." "Thank you. And thank you for my headpiece. I love it." Sullivan's little project in the outbuilding that he'd rushed to hide was his wedding gift to me. The golden headpiece was quite brilliant, sitting smartly on my head with two tiny hooks to hold a veil down my back. Furthermore, he'd placed tiny loops in the front so I could string flowers into it too, and the result was stunning. This would be what I wore every crowning day for the rest of my life. He gave a little nod before stepping back. Silas nudged his brother's arm, their own way of communicating, and everything, everything was perfect. "Come here, wife," Silas said, pulling me away. "I want to greet your parents before they find an excuse to leave." Bypassing every rule of etiquette I knew, Silas walked right up to my mother and embraced her. "Mother," he announced, and I stood back, trying not to laugh at the horrified expression on her face. "And father," he said, reaching out for a handshake. "We're both so happy you could be here today."
"We may not be able to stay for long," my father said quickly. "We're planning to head back to Kereskin tomorrow, and we need to oversee the packing."
"So soon?" I asked.
"We prefer our lodgings at the palace," Mother said plainly. "Varinger just echoes."
I supposed a house that big with so few people in it would leave one feeling rather small. "Promise me you won't go before the dessert. Lady Istoff has ordered apple cakes, and apparently it's Isoltan tradition for one to be crumbled over my head for luck." Mother laughed, and I counted that rare event as a wedding gift.
"You're going to be covered in crumbs?"
"Yes, but I figure I get to eat some of the dessert before anyone else, so I can't complain."
She shook her head. "Always looking on the bright side."
Closing her eyes, she took a deep breath before speaking again.
"I wish I'd been able to appreciate that more."
"There's still time," I whispered. She nodded, tears in her eyes. I could see she was still broken from everything that had happened, but it also looked like she wanted to move forward. I hoped there was still room for me in her heart.
"We'll stay for the apple cakes," Father promised. "But after that, we really do have to go. There are things we have to tend to at the castle."
I nodded. "I understand. Will you tell the king how happy I looked? And that I wish him the same happiness?" Father let out a long breath.
I'll say what feels appropriate in the moment."
That wasn't the answer I'd wanted. I'd hoped for a better future for the king, for his blessing on mine. Apparently, my parents didn't think this was a possibility. I curtsied and let Silas lead me away. I wanted them here, but that was hard.
"Everyone's adjusting," he assured me. "Trust me, this will smooth itself out."
"I hope so."
"You can't frown like that, Hollis. Not on your wedding day. If you don't cheer up, you're going to force me to ruin the surprise."
I pulled him to a stop, watching that satisfied smirk on his face.
"Surprise?"
He started humming.
"Silas Istoff, you tell me right now," I demanded, pulling on his arm.
He laughed until he decided to end the suspense. Turning to me, he took my face in his hands.
"I'm sorry I can't take you to Isolt, but I can take you to Erador."
I sucked in a breath.
"We're going? Do you mean it?"
He nodded. "I have to turn in 2 hunting knives by the end of next week, and once they're done, we're setting off for the coast." I flew at him, draping my arms around him.
"Thank you."
"I told you. I want to give you everything I can. This is only the beginning."
"Hollis, might I borrow you for a moment?" Lady Istoff asked, coming up behind me.
"I can go greet more guests," Silas offered.
"You're going to have a very spoiled wife," I warned him.
"Good," he called,
walking cheerfully to greet the closest couple. "My Lady Eastoff," his mother greeted me, and I giggled with delight.
"It's true. I'm finally an Eastoff."
"Just as you should be." She wrapped an arm around me. "Before things get too hectic in here, I wanted to talk a moment. Would you join me outside?"
"Of course."
She nodded her head toward the door, and we made our way into the garden. The sections toward the back were still a little overgrown, but anything a guest might see looked pristine. The tall, thick walls of shrubs made a perfect place to wander and think, and I had spent much of my time out here in the sun over the last 2 weeks. Now that very sun was setting over the horizon, leaving the sky a beautiful shade of purple.
"It does my heart good to see you and Silas settled. Now no one can argue over your place, and I think it helps us too. We're tied to Koroa forever," she said with a smile.
It felt like such a tangled mess to get here, like it was going to be impossible. But look, it's done. And people came to witness it, to be friendly. My parents are here. Ah, it's unbelievably perfect.
"It is," she agreed. "And I hope you can remember this moment for the rest of your life. Marriage can be challenging, but if you can always come back to this place, to the love, to the vows, then everything will work itself out."
"I'll remember that. Thank you." She smiled, stopping. "Anytime." Now, the wedding makes things official, but there are other traditions that need to be honored as well. And it's good luck to have something old, so I'm passing this on to you. Lady Eastoff reached down to her right hand and slid a large sapphire ring off her finger, holding it up in the fading daylight. "This ring was once worn by a great man in Isolde. It was given to his fifth-born child, his third son, and it has been passed down through the Eastoff family for generations. I know our past means little here, but it is deep and rich. One day I will sit and tell you all the old stories. For now, you must wear this, and you must wear it with pride." She had stories for me, and I suspected Silas had tales of his own. Soon they would be woven into my life as our histories became intertwined. My fingers trembled as I reached out for this ring, one more thread in the tapestry.
"It's beautiful. But are you sure? Shouldn't Scarlet have this?"
"I have other things to pass to her. But you are the wife of my eldest son, as I am the wife of an eldest son. It's a tradition, and we Isoltans are nothing if not traditional."
"So I've seen."
As I spent more time in the Eastoff's home, I saw how they did everything they could to preserve their way of life. There were dozens of little details in how they executed day-to-day tasks, and each one was accompanied by an explanation of its importance, delivered with great care. "If this is the custom, then I will take it. As long as you're positive, Scarlet won't be upset." Lady Eastoff embraced me. "Putting this on your hand establishes you as part of our line. She will be overjoyed."
"You make it sound so..."
We were pulled away from our moment by a high-pitched wave of screams.
"What's that?"
I asked. We had wandered farther out into the tall bushes of the garden than I'd realized, and we couldn't see the house. As the screaming continued, we raced through the bushes, trying to understand. We crept up to the edge of a high wall of shrubbery, peeking around the side. There were at least a dozen horses by the entryway.
"They came for us," Lady Eastoff breathed in horror. "They finally came."
Chapter 32. They. Thanks to Valentina, I knew exactly who they were.
The darkest nights. I breathed so quietly I didn't think Lady Eastoff heard me. There were more screams, and I impulsively started running again. Silas was in there. Before I could get too far, I was thrown to the ground. I heard my veil rip as I fell.
"What are you doing?"
I asked, beginning to cry.
"We have to help them."
"Shh," she insisted, covering my mouth until I settled long enough to hear her. "What do you think you could do? We have no horses, no swords, no nothing. My husband and yours would command us to stay in place if they could, and so we shall."
"That's our family in there,"
I insisted.
"That's our family."
She dragged me back behind the cover of some topiaries, and I kicked the whole way. I would not be kept from Silas.
"Look at me, Hollis."
I stopped fighting long enough to meet her eyes, and what I saw shook me to the core. How quickly she had gone from proud to broken, from lovely to disheveled.
"If you think this isn't breaking me, you're wrong. But Dashiell and I, we made a deal, we made plans, and if one of us could ever make it out alive, that was what we had to do."
She pulled back skinny branches to see what she could. It was a shocking contrast, the beautiful sky, the scent of the flowers, and the violent shouts filling the air.
"Why won't you run? Why would you even make such a plan?"
When she didn't answer, I moved to stand, but she was on top of me again in an instant.
"I made promises to Silas too. Now stay down."
At the sound of his name, I stilled. Why in the world would Silas have a plan for me? Why didn't I know about it? Why was I cowering in the grass when he might be dying? I covered my ears. I could hear the grunts of fighting still, and I wished I could yell out to tell everyone to stop. But it seemed I'd already risked too much, and I couldn't bring danger to someone who had made vows to protect me.
"I don't understand,"
I insisted over and over, whimpering out the words.
"Why aren't we helping?"
She said nothing, only carefully looking beyond the bushes when she thought it was safe, and then quickly darting back. Her hands were safely locked onto me, ready to hold me down again if I threatened to run. I remembered what Silas had said. He'd told me the Darkest Night's destruction was absolute. I wanted to vomit at the thought of Silas enduring absolute destruction. The horror felt like it went on for an eternity. I tried to will Silas into living, into surviving whatever had just happened. Then I felt instantly guilty that my thoughts were of him and not anyone else. Saul still had so much living to do, and Sullivan was such a gentle soul that being in the room alone was probably enough to ruin him. And maybe my parents weren't perfectly content, but that didn't mean they didn't deserve more time to try. After both too much and too little time, the cries and shouts died down and gave way to sick laughter. That's how I knew they were leaving. These men had finished their task and were now joking about their success. It was disgustingly satisfied, the sound of a job well done, the sound of many congratulations. Then I heard another sound, crackling. We watched them ride off, making sure we could no longer hear the horses before daring to even stand.
"Please,"
I whispered.
"Please."
Then I risked opening my eyes. The sound had made it clear, but I still couldn't believe they'd set fire to the house. We hurried from the garden, rushing, though I worried our opportunity to help had passed. I pushed down my fear with each step, desperate to get closer, to see if anyone had lived. Only one corner of the house was in flames. There was a chance we could save anyone who was still breathing. I stopped in front of the main door, afraid to step inside, terrified of what I was going to see.
"Mother?"
A whimper came from the shadowy corner by the front door.
Scarlet, is that you? Oh, thank goodness.
She ran over, clutching her child as she wept violently.
My girl. I still have my girl.
I looked at the house. Nothing stirred. Was she the only one left? Were those the darkest nights? I asked, though I was already quite sure. Lady Eastoff whipped her head over to me.
How do you even know about them?
She asked, turning back to touch every inch of Scarlet's face, unable to believe she was still there. Valentina. Silas. She shook her head, turning back to her daughter.
I thought they'd let us live in peace if we left, but I was wrong.
This made no sense. Why would they do this to you?
Oh, Mother, they came in with masks down and swords drawn, stabbing at anyone in their way, even the maids. I don't know what happened to me. I froze. I couldn't fight.
You aren't supposed to fight. You know that, her mother urged. You're supposed to run.
A man took me by the shoulders. He held me for a moment, and I thought he was just going to kill me slowly. But then he grabbed me by the wrist and threw me outside. I tried to run, but I still couldn't move. I crawled into the bushes and hid. I wanted to fight, Mother. I wanted to hurt them.
Lady Eastoff held her tighter.
They spared me, and I don't know why. And I watched. I saw.
She broke into sobs, unable to speak of it anymore. I shook my head. I didn't understand any of this. Hitching up my skirt, I moved to go inside.
What are you doing?
Lady Eastoff asked.
Checking for survivors.
Her blue eyes were hollow.
Hollis, listen to me.
There won't be any. I swallowed.
I have to.
She shook her head.
Hollis, please,
Lady Eastoff said, her voice alone a clear warning.
That will do you more harm than good.
The air of certainty around her words, as if this was nothing new, chilled me, despite the heat from the flames beginning to engulf the entire east wing of the manor. Maybe it was only in my head that we waited so we could live and go back to find survivors. Maybe it was already in hers that she knew we wouldn't.
I have to...
She lowered her head as I pressed forward. I walked into the house and was almost immediately run over by a servant carrying golden plates, running as if his life depended on it. I sucked in a breath of hope, believing someone must have made it, but I instantly regretted the move as I coughed over the smoke. Turning toward the great hall, where only moments ago we'd been toasting the future, I saw great tongues of fire devouring the tables and the tapestries, and someone who looked to be Saul. He'd been brought down just by the door. I dropped my eyes to the floor, covering my mouth to hold in the screams. She was right. Simply seeing that had made the entire thing that much worse. Now, instead of the collective group dying, I had a face, an image. I was never going to forget the blood, the smell. I wanted to keep going. I could try to find Silas, but the fire was set in more places than we could see from outside. And there were no cries for help. If Silas had made a plan for me, one in which I survived, I would have to walk away now. Because seeing him in pieces or being consumed by flames would not be something I lived through. And if I walked much farther in, I might not make it back out. I coughed, struggling to breathe, and ran back outside. Lady Eastoff took in the horror on my face and nodded once.
I looked over at Scarlett and had to guess my expression was a hollow echo of hers. She was lost in what she'd just seen, and I could see all the ghosts in her eyes. I walked down and embraced her, and she held onto me tight for just a minute. Taking Scarlett's hand in mine, Lady Eastoff turned toward the path they'd freshly laid out for my wedding and stared.
"Where will we go?"
Scarlett asked.
"Varinger Hall, of course,"
I suggested dully. Lady Eastoff pulled her chin up and started walking. "Come, my girls. It won't do to look back." But I did look back. I watched as the curtains carried the fire up, up, up. She was right. We had to keep walking. It was obvious to me now that this family must have seen at least one moment like this before. How else could they step away from it so calmly, as if it was only a matter of time before another moment landed in their laps? Why else would they map out how at least one of them should try to live if they could? Silas had told me about the darkest nights in a way that put some distance between them and him. But there was no doubt they'd come face to face before. It was just that this time, he didn't walk away from the meeting. If we had been thinking, we might have gone by the stables for a horse. Instead, we walked in silence, trudging toward my childhood home. It ought to have given me a sense of security, knowing I was finally going to pass through the doors of Varinger Hall again. All I could think of was why I had to. I'd have rather stayed locked out forever. My ears were on high alert, listening for the sound of horses or screams or anything that might have told me to start running. There were no horses, though, or screams. Just us. When we finally approached the front gate, a steward was waiting for us on the steps. He held out a lantern, seeing there were three shapes instead of two, that there were only female silhouettes, and that the fine carriage was nowhere to be seen.
"Wake up! Wake up!"
he called into the house. By the time we were at the front